The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Do you know what they are calling one of their leaders?
Who, God voice?
The Togairu Rebels. One band of raiders has named their leader Ashwarawu. Do you know what that means? He who kills without mercy.
Our enemy is a Ru called Ashwarawu.
A mighty leader?
A coward who strikes at the vulnerable and retreats to the shadows. But of late, he grows bolder, and his attacks come nearer and nearer to Daryan.
I will line the steps with the heads of Chezole dog warriors.
You cannot fight a war alone. I've heard of Ashwarawu.
Ashwarawu gathers warriors as he roams from village to village. The barons fear him.
We know where he is, or we know at least where you can go to be found.
Ashwarawu.
You are far from any village, woman.
I am where I'm meant to be.
Who are you, and why have you come?
I am Bryn Dariel. I have no home, and I was a wanderer until very recently when I happened upon a village controlled by a despised Yatol. I killed the Yatol, and his Chezole lackey beside him. And so again, I have no home.
Then you are welcome as one of my warriors.
How did you find us?
Perhaps you are not as well hidden as you believe.
How he found us is not as important as why he found us. What do the sisters see in our struggles that would so interest you, Mystic?
I have come to Togai to learn.
What is there to learn, Mystic? How to fight? How to die?
Perhaps how to live.
Kill the rats! Kill all of them!
Don't miss the cataclysmic action in part 2 of the Demon Wars Saga Book 6, Transcendence. Available now in graphic audio.
Graphic audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Vada's War by Elizabeth Moon. Book 4, Command Decision, Part 2. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Lily Beacon, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Yasmin Twazam, Christopher Graybill, James Lewis, Drew Copus, Stephen Carpenter, Barbara Pinellini, Sherry Simpson, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Jeff Baker, Michael John Casey, Andy Clemens, Eric Messner, Jeff Allen, Joe Brack, Danny Gabigan, Tim Getman, Kimberly Gilbert, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Scott McCormick, Tony Nam, Gary Tells, Richard Rowan, and Ken Jackson.
Rafe had not believed he could sleep, but once he lay down on a cot in Gary's underground headquarters to wait for his transport, the relief of the rescue sent him under. Gary woke him only 2 hours later.
Sun's coming up. Time to hit the road. You're still a new helper in the business. Same idea as what I gave you yesterday.
We're going to my workshop.
You really do make windows and doors? And why there instead of Balcock?
My people need salaries even when we don't have a specialty job. And I have a legitimate small business within 2 hours of each of my secure ops command posts, like this. The people at the nearest business don't work that op. And so far, that's worked for me. Enough chatter. You should pretend to sleep in the van. You're lazy. Once we're at the shop, you should have time for a real nap before you shower and change back into your Cascadia persona. We need to have you seen coming back to pick up your ID, which should be free by late afternoon. I'll take you in, and you and I will head to the next transfer point. Don't ask me where.
How are they? Have you heard?
Alive. Signs of maltreatment, but they're not in danger of dying. At least not from that. They're still being assessed. I know you won't relax, but I don't cut corners on medical stuff.
By the end of that day, Rafe felt as confused as he hoped anyone trying to trace him was. Sid had driven the van to Gary's shop, a typical light industrial shop with ventilation hoods rising from its pitched roof. Everything about it looked completely legitimate, from the sign out front to the fence around the paved yard, where another van with the same logo and a heavier truck with a load of wood were parked. Inside, it smelled of sawdust and machine oil. At least a dozen workers, all in similar coveralls and wearing safety glasses and ear protectors, worked on what Rafe assumed were actual windows and doors. Gary's office, at the back, had a wide table piled with samples of wood, design displays, and paperwork. Through a side door, there was a tiny efficiency apartment, a cot, a cooler, a bathroom with shower and toilet. In the afternoon, Gary appeared, looking rested himself, and Rafe, back in his Jensen Ratanvi disguise, got into Gary's car for the drive to the village. They arrived near sunset. Lilyhands met them outside the bar and handed over Rafe's ID with a smile.
Judicar got back this morning, Sir Ratanvi. She said to apologize to you for the inconvenience, and we all wish you the best.
You were most gracious hosts, and I do apologize for the misunderstanding.
I'll be glad to run you into the city.
That's very kind.
Rafe figured everyone in the village was probably in on the ploy, but it never hurt to be courteous. From there, Gary drove him through the night as Rafe struggled out of Ratanvi's disguise once more and put on the sweater, slacks, and wool jacket Gary provided. At a private airfield, Rafe boarded a small craft and spent 2 uncomfortable hours wedged between crates and a pilot who never spoke. Outside, just before they landed in the early morning, he could see lower hills rising close to a wide brown river they seemed to be flying along. He spent the last leg of the journey locked in the back of a bread truck making deliveries and obeyed the driver's instruction to walk around from the loading dock and present himself at the front door of the clinic. It reminded him unpleasantly of the Green Hills Center with its broad green lawns, its exposed public drive to the front, and the concealed drive up which the bread truck had come. On black glass doors etched with a pattern of leaves, the clinic's name and specialty was embossed in ornate gold script. Alero Clinic. Substance Issues. Inside, behind a dark stone enclosure, a uniformed man gave him a sharp look and then opened the door beyond.
This way, please. You'll want to see Dr. Alero.
Tension knotted Rafe's stomach. He trusted Gary. He had to trust Gary. But this could be a trap. The hall beyond the door, carpeted in dull olive, appeared to stretch the depth of the building. A man came out of a doorway ahead and turned toward him. He was taller than Rafe, trim, with dark hair becomingly streaked silver.
Sir Dunbarger, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm Dr. Alero. You'll have many questions, but you'll want to see them first, I'm sure.
Without waiting for an answer, he turned and led Rafe down the hall to a cross corridor, then turned again.
We're going down. There's a lift just here.
The sign by the lift said staff only, and it required a key.
There's been no evidence that anyone knows they're here. Apparently there's quite a bit of activity up north and in the northwest, but nothing to worry about. If you're wondering, this is, most of the time, a private and very expensive clinic for moneyed individuals who habitually poison themselves with undesirable chemicals. We also take in the occasional wealthy psychotic who refuses treatment elsewhere.
He led the way out. It looked like every hospital corridor Rafe had seen, very clean, and for something underground, very airy.
Just down here. Your mother and sister first. They're conscious. Talk to them first, then come talk to me. There are decisions to be made. Be gentle. Don't try to interrogate them, but let them talk if they want to. When you're through there, Dr. Kinjan will take you to your father. He's assigned as your father's primary physician while he's here.
Rafe's mother and sister both wore thick fleece robes, incongruously printed with bright pink flower shapes that looked ugly against the bruises.
Mother, it's Raphael.
She reached toward him. Rafe moved closer and took her hands in his, careful not to dislodge her IV line.
Rafe? Oh, my... Rafi, why weren't you here? He could never have done it if you'd been here.
Rafe stroked her hands. Don't ask questions, the doctors had said. Don't disturb her. But she was already disturbed.
Shh, I'm here now, Mother, and you're safe.
She clung to him, her eyes still desperate. Rafe fought down the rage she must not see. His anger had frightened her so before.
Is he? They won't tell me.
Father is alive. He's very weak. He escaped. He tried to get out and find help, but it was too cold.
They hurt him. They hurt all of us. I can't believe he'd do such a thing. He was going to be CEO anyway.
Father?
No, no. Oh, I forgot you don't know. Lou. Lucky Lou, your father called him. A fine young man, we thought. He always seemed like a fine young man. A good family, nice manners, a hard worker. I can't understand it. Why?
I never liked him.
The voice from the next bed startled Rafe. He turned to look at his sister, Penelope. Her dark hair hung lank and stringy beside a pale, gaunt face. She looked nothing like he remembered, or like the formal portraits displayed at home.
You told me how wonderful it was for Father to have such a reliable, competent successor. But his daughter was scared of him. I knew her at school.
You never told me that.
I tried to. You told me not to meddle. But all children get crosswise with their parents on occasion.
They do, but... Of course you couldn't have realized... But, Rafi, why did it take you so long?
So long?
You didn't get your father's messages?
No, nothing. That's one reason I came back to Nexus to visit. I didn't know anything was wrong until I tried to call and didn't get an answer.
Best not tell her about the trapped phone connection. She didn't need something else to scare her.
Then I went to the house, and it was obvious.
What? What did you find at the house?
My room. You kept my room the same.
Oh, Rafe. You saw.
I expected you to clean it out. You told me not to come back.
I knew you would. I knew you would someday come to your senses and be our son again. And then you'd come home and your room would be ready for you, just as if... As if it had never happened.
But it had happened. And all his life since, and theirs, had been changed forever. That night the invaders tried to kidnap him and his sister, and a young boy had taken a lucky swipe with a display weapon and killed a man twice his age and size.
I saw it. You even kept my old models. I wish you'd been there with me. Anyway, I didn't know where you were or what was wrong, just that something was.
They told him, your father, that they'd set traps for you, that you couldn't possibly get through. Was it you who got us out? I didn't recognize...
I hired the team. I wasn't on it myself. I'm not trained for that.
Her grip on his hands tightened.
I thought we were going to die. I thought they'd kill us. I thought nobody would find us, even if they were looking. He said they wouldn't. That he had convinced the police it was for our safety that we were sequestered.
He convinced someone.
How did you know that we needed help? Or where we were?
The house, for one thing. The plants were dying. I couldn't imagine Mother leaving the house without arranging for their care. In fact, without leaving servants there, if only to guard it from thieves.
Did you water them?
Mother! Don't be ridiculous.
No, I didn't. I could tell something was wrong. I was afraid if I turned on the water, it might bring trouble.
You were always the smart one. If I hadn't been so scared that time...
You were only a little kid. Of course you were scared.
You were only 11.
11-year-olds are big kids. At least 11-year-olds think so. Penny, don't feel guilty, please. None of this is your fault.
Tears spilled over and ran down her cheeks. He couldn't stand it.
I'm going to check on Father. I'll be back.
His father would live. They had promised him that. His core temperature had been dangerously low, but the outside temperature hadn't been enough to cause serious frostbite. Rafe stared through the glass panel. His father lay still, IVs dripping into both arms, a warming blanket over his body, and other tubes coming out from underneath. Rafe didn't want to think about what had caused those marks on his hands, his feet, his face. His first hot rage had turned cold, colder than the glacier above Aurora Adventure Lodge. Dr. Kinjon came up beside Rafe. He was Rafe's height, and almost as plump as Rafe's Cascadian persona. He glanced at Rafe's face, took a step back, then turned away.
You shouldn't try to rouse him yet. He's sedated right now. His core temperature is stabilized, but with his other injuries and the drugs he had in his system, we felt mild sedation was a good idea. He was also dehydrated and clearly has been malnourished for some days.
But he'll recover.
Yes, but it will take time.
Fully?
We'll just have to see. The stresses, his age, there's the possibility that complete recovery will be prolonged or not entirely complete. When someone's implant has been tampered with, the neuropsych specialist will be here tomorrow. When we know exactly how much damage the implant took and possibly delivered, we'll know more.
His father had been intelligent. More than intelligent. Brilliant in many ways. Intelligent, charming, commanding. And now he lay almost comatose, his body battered, his brain... Rafe shook his head sharply.
He has to recover. It's important.
It's always important.
Before he knew he had moved, Rafe had the doctor's collar in his hands. The man's face went white with the shock of that sudden attack.
You don't understand. It's not just him. It's not just my father. He was snatched for a reason, and that reason affects not just Nexus, but 1,000 other systems. Someone's trying to bring down ISC. Do you have any idea what that means?
Rafe let up the pressure, but didn't let go completely.
Sorry. Do you know who he is?
A hostage that Gary rescued. It's all I know. It's all I'm supposed to know.
And you rightly assume rich and powerful. And you wonder that you haven't heard anything, am I right?
The man nodded.
That's the CEO of ISC. He was abducted on the orders of the Next in Succession, who certainly has hooks in the government, judging by their complicity in this. What you may not know is that hundreds, at least, of Ansibles are out of service, and ISC personnel are involved in that. I believe on the orders of the man who kidnapped my father. People are dying because my father is here and not in his office. If that man isn't stopped, none of us is safe.
That still doesn't give you the right to choke me.
Rafe let go.
You're right. I'm sorry. I've been distraught.
I gathered. Gary did warn me about you, but you just don't look like the type. I'm sorry I upset you. We'll be easing up on the sedation over the next 24 hours, and you should be able to talk to your father then.
Rafe had been given a room in the staff wing of the clinic. The next day, when he went down to the hospital level, Alero met him outside his father's room.
Hey, let's go see what the neuropsych says about your father's implant. He's done an initial neural assessment. He's in the lab.
The neuropsych expert, introduced only as Tony, stared at the trace from Rafe's father's implant.
Not liking this a bit.
What?
Well, they tried to probe the implant before they removed it. In lay terms, they ran too much power into it, trying to force it to work and cause damage. And enough power that it heated up part of his brain.
And that means...
It means he has brain damage. Possibly permanent, but certainly something it's going to take time to repair. And his implant cannot be replaced. Most people depend on an implant for a good part of their knowledge base. He can't.
But you can install another one, can't you?
Not anymore. Not with the brain damage. If we boost the signal enough to pass the damaged portion, we risk the same damage to something else. For now, we're leaving the damaged implant in. It gives him some function he wouldn't have otherwise. But it has to come out so we can start the repair of the brain itself. And at that point, he will seem worse than he is now. How much worse, we don't know until we take out the implant. Basically, he's like a stroke patient, and in his case, a serious stroke patient. Luckily, he chose to have his implant on the right side, so his language centers are relatively unaffected. But you're looking at a long, slow, incomplete recovery.
But he can talk.
He can talk now, a few words at a time. He tires quickly. He's still somewhat confused. It's too early to test all his cognitive functions, and with the sedation, he's become disoriented. We've changed the setup of his room, which should help. I've tested his facial recognition. That's intact, too. He recognized your face in a picture we showed him. So, if you want to go in and talk, keeping it calm and not asking questions and not upsetting him, you can do that.
Rafe entered his father's room with what he hoped was a pleasant expression.
Rafe.
His father's face, with eyes open and focusing, looked more like his father, and yet unlike. For the first time, Rafe was looking down on his father, and for the first time, he had no fear, no anger, and no contempt. Only a great sadness.
Father, you're looking better.
I can't sit up by myself. My left arm.
Father, don't worry. You'll get better.
Rafe, you have to know. It was Lou. Lou Parmina. He's... I don't know why entirely, but he's gone completely insane. That's the only reason I can think of. He knew he would succeed me. I was going to retire in 5 years. He's been my friend for years. I thought my friend...
Father, don't wear yourself out.
But you have to know. You have to help me.
Help you how?
I told you, in my message.
I never got your message. I came back because I hadn't heard from you in too long, and I was worried.
You never got... But you came anyway. Rafe, I always knew you'd... But he said... But maybe...
Rafe felt old memories, snatches of overheard conversation, sequences of events coming together in his mind.
Father, was it Lou who first told you I was dangerous? Was he the one who recommended the therapist?
His father's gaze wavered again.
I can't quite remember. I know later, when you were in trouble at that school, he was sympathetic. Said he knew that it must be hard to be disappointed. And I was sure you'd come out of it. You'd been such a sweet child.
Rafe had no memory of being sweet, even before the home invasion. Polite, well-mannered, that was expected. But not ever sweet.
You used to be so affectionate. When I came home, you'd climb in my lap and butt your head against my chin.
His father clearly wanted Rafe to remember those times, but he didn't.
But Lou said it was rare for children who killed to change, that it was usually a sign of deep-seated personality disorders. He had references. The therapist agreed. He said I had to be realistic, be concerned for the welfare of ISC, both employees and those who depended on our services. Then, when I was given the job of CEO and you were on remittance...
His father looked suddenly grayer.
I'll come back later. Just rest.
The next morning, Dr. Alero met Rafe in the corridor.
I don't know what you're planning, and I don't need to. But if it involves, for instance, transporting this patient and expecting him to, to speak to a group about business, for instance, you'd better do it within the next 10 days. We can't risk leaving the damaged implant in longer than that.
Can he survive travel so fast?
With the right supports, yes. He's getting a little stronger each day. You can expect that his concentration will vary, however, and your visit should be short.
I understand. Thanks.
Dr. Alero nodded and moved away down the hall. Rafe turned and walked slowly into his father's room.
I think that Lou has had something like this in mind from the beginning.
He couldn't. It's impossible.
They never traced the intruders that night. They never found who hired them, right?
Well, no.
Lou found that therapist for you. I would bet on it. The therapist and Lou chose the school you sent me to. I know for a fact that Lou set me up with girls when I went to college.
I didn't know that.
I thought it was with your approval, since he was your assistant. He gave me money. He gave me names and numbers. When he sent me money later, my remittance, he used to tell me how disappointed you were, and then give me contacts to elements I found surprising.
But he was always so nice.
To you, I'm sure he was. You were his ladder, to be kicked away when he thought he had his hands firmly on the top of the tree. And I didn't see it. I was too hurt, too angry, and mostly I was not here, which I'm sure was his intent.
His father's gaze had sharpened, almost to the intensity Rafe remembered.
I think you may be right. I can't quite... Ugh, this blasted implant thing. There's information in there that would help me think clearly about it, but I can't. It's not working right. I need a new one.
You can't. Not yet, anyway. When they've done the neural repairs to your head...
My brain, I know. I can't think. That's why I need your help. And you're as sharp as ever. It didn't take you long to find Lou's trail in our lives. You're going to have to take over.
Take over? You can't mean take over ISC.
That's exactly what I mean. We can't let Lou have it. I don't know all he's planned, but what they did taught me with while I was hostage was bad enough. He's determined to maintain the monopoly, and he's working with some kind of military leader, someone named Gamus Turek. The Ansible outages
are his fault, and I know something about Gamus Turek.
You've met him?
No, but a bad guy we... more on that later. Ran into over in Sector 5 had a suicide circuit implanted to keep him from revealing the name. And supposedly it was Turek's people who attacked Bissonnette and took over its system government. I suspect something similar almost happened at Slaughter Key.
Lou has friends on Slaughter Key. The Vada family. Vada Transport Limited. You must know their ships.
They're mostly dead. I've been traveling with a couple of them.
Probably his spies. Fed you any number of lies.
I don't think so. I've known Stella for years, and it wasn't through Lou. Her cousin Kailara, very much the straight arrow Kai.
I thought Lou was. Right now, I wouldn't trust anyone Lou ever called a friend. The Slaughter Key Ansible's still down, isn't it?
As far as I know, yes.
No use trying to explain how Rafe was sure that Stella and Kai weren't lying about their families, or that Vata had been an innocent dupe, not complicit.
So you can't check what they told you. But that's another problem for another day. Right now, Rafe, you simply must get to the board and convince them of Lou's perfidy. You can't let him take over. At the least, your life and ours will be in danger.
But I don't know anything about running a corporation, let alone one as vast as ISC.
Even as Rafe said it, he knew that wasn't quite true. He'd had his own businesses. He understood how business worked. He had grown up in ISC. He had done work for them.
And I can't... Why would you trust me? Why would they?
Because if I was that wrong about Lou... Then I assume I was that wrong about you, too. If I think of the little boy you were, all that intelligence and fire and sweetness, yes, sweetness, don't flinch like that. The way you never did a single underhanded thing, other than the usual she broke it when a dish dropped, and that was only the once, then I see the potential in the man to be as intelligent, capable and honest as you were then.
Tears sprang to Rafe's eyes. He blinked them back.
I'm not that little boy anymore, Father.
No. And a good thing you're not, or we'd all be dead. You've had a hard life. You've learned hard lessons, harder than some of mine. It will take someone like you. And I'm sure Lou has collaborators on the board and elsewhere in ISC. I want you to find a secure way to reach the next board meeting. What's the date?
Rafe told him.
But, Father, I'm just not cut out to be an executive.
Nonsense! You're my son! You're also the only weapon I've got. You have to do this, Rafe. Or millions, probably billions of people will die. And more will be ruined because of Lou and his allies.
Rafe had never wanted the job. He had told himself that over and over. He was a freelance, a lone wolf, a wild rogue adventurer, able to go and come as he pleased. Only partly dependent on that remittance credit, once he found that he could support himself one way and another, he felt the weight of it pressing on him now. All that responsibility he didn't want.
I trust you, Rafe. Not just because you saved my life, our lives just now. Not just because you were a good child, but in part because you killed those intruders. And in part because you have survived on your own and developed skills I never needed or thought I needed. I am trusting you with this, and you will not let me down.
Whatever his father had lost, he had not lost the ability to inspire loyalty and delegate. Rafe took a long breath, feeling now the full weight of what his father wanted him to do firmly on his shoulders.
I'll talk to Gary. And we also need to get the accounts open so I can pay him and his team.
When you're sure you can get to the meeting without being killed, I will make a shielded video call. I have to show myself to them, to convince the ones Lou hasn't already corrupted. He'll probably try to tell them that you kidnapped me and have pressured me.
Thought of that? I'll bring them here, one at a time, by roundabout routes to talk to you.
I think most of ISC's loyal. I just don't know who.
Where are your implant backups? Did you have them?
I did. He got them. But although they might contain information to convict him, they wouldn't tell him anything he didn't know.
My, cranial ansible. The access code for it?
His father's eyes closed briefly.
I'm sorry, Rafe. They got that out of me when they threatened to kill the baby. And then they did anyway.
What about Linnet and Derry?
His older sisters, who had never married as far as he knew. The night of the attack, they had been off at boarding school.
Dead. Supposedly both accidental. Though now, of course, I wonder about that. Linnet had gone on a ski trip with her boyfriend. Lou's cousin, now I think of it. She was a good skier. But there was an avalanche. No one's that good.
The cousin?
Also died, along with 15 others who were on that slope. Derry had taken a commercial flight with several friends to go to a wedding. It crashed with no survivors. Pilot error, the safety board ruled. A night landing, and the pilot undershot the runway. Altimeter wasn't set properly. And there was a little hill, hardly 100 meters high. I see now. Either one could have been arranged if you didn't mind killing a lot of other people.
So there was just Penelope left, and me. What about Penelope's husband?
He died when we were taken. Tried to defend her. Nice boy. Lou hadn't thought much of him. He wasn't ISC at all. His father was a wholesale grocer. Decent fellow, very down to earth. We got along fine. Penelope adored Jared. They were so excited about the pregnancy.
Rafe let him cry a moment, turning aside to look at the cheery picture of a woman cradling a child by a window that overlooked a pleasant green field.
All right. Let's get to work.
Lou's tentacles had reached far into the government as well as ISC's power structure, as Rafe's discreet inquiries proved. But Václav Hewitt Box, one of his father's oldest friends, was clean of that taint.
Garston, where in thunder are you? Lou's been telling us you're in safekeeping for fear your demon son will kill you. But he won't tell us where.
I'm at a secure clinic, recovering from the treatment Lou Palmina's goons gave me. Ardith is alive, and so is Penelope. But Jared and the baby are both dead.
What?
Listen, I don't think any communication on this planet is truly secure, Václav. So I don't know how long we can talk without the call being traced. If it is, your life is in danger too. I believe that Lou engineered the deaths of my other daughters as well. Rafe saved our lives.
That sounds like hogwash, Garston. He went bad. Bad boys stay bad.
Poppycock! He didn't go bad without help, and he's not bad now. He saved our lives. He got us out of the hellhole where Lou put us with his goons. Václav, remember Christine?
Ah, yes, Christine of the Flowers.
Christine of the Owls, you nitwit.
All right. What do you want me to do?
I want Rafe to take over for me, for now. I've got serious injuries, and my implant's fried.
You sound sane enough.
Right-sided installation. No speech damage, and yes, I can think. But my left side is involved, and I can't change implants until they've done some repairs.
Good grief. You really were.
That close to death, yes. I don't know who on the board will lose plants. Termanian, probably. Oster, maybe Wickens. But Lou's the real danger. I need to meet you in person. You'll know then that I'm not some zombie plant of Rafe's.
Where is Rafe? Do you know?
He's here, with me. Like I said, he got us out.
By himself?
No, but this is going on too long, Václav. Will you come, quietly?
Yes. Anywhere. Tell me.
I can't, but I can tell you what to say.
Rafe had never been in the boardroom. As a small child, he'd been taken to headquarters, shown the office his father had then, had seen assistants and secretaries scurrying to do anything his father asked. One of them had given him candy. Now, armed with ID and credentials Václav had provided, wearing a new suit altered overnight to his measurements by one of Gary's contacts, he pushed the float chair with his father up to the entry. They were flanked by four of Gary's people.
Sir Dunbarger, the rest of the board are all here. Sir Parmina said you wouldn't be in today again. He said...
As you see, I'm here. Only a little the worse for wear. You won't remember my son, Raphael, and these are my security.
They're not ISC.
No, for the moment I'm using a private service.
I don't know if I should...
You should. I vouch for them. Can't come from higher than that, can it?
He managed a grin. The guard finally smiled back.
All right, Sir Dunbarger, if you're sure. They'll need tags once they're inside.
The tags are waiting for us. Václav, over here.
Václav Box, taller than Rafe by a head, waved and came forward.
You said four tags. Here they are. Go ahead.
Rafe pushed the float chair forward. The guard would no doubt report this to someone, possibly someone in Lou Parmina's pay, when they were passed. But that shouldn't matter. The executive elevator was just ahead, its doors already open. They all crowded in. Václav gave Rafe a sardonic look.
You've changed, Rafe.
Time does that. I believe the last time I saw you, I was 14 or 15, wasn't it? Not my best year.
No, it wasn't. This is going to be interesting. Are you ready for any surprises?
Surprise is surprise because one is not ready. I expect trouble, if that's what you mean. He's had years to set this up. We've only had a short time to unravel it. We're bound to have missed something.
Rafe's hand wanted to slide into the suit, be sure of his weapons. But he made himself stand relaxed.
You always were a confident so-and-so.
He got that from me. Only in his case, the overconfidence was beaten out of him early.
The elevator rose smoothly past floor after floor, coming to rest at last. The doors opened onto a carpeted space with a receptionist's desk angled to give a view into the elevator. The man there was scribbling something on the desktop. He looked up, and his brows raised.
Sir Box, the meeting started several minutes ago. Didn't you hear your page? And... Sir Dunbarger, I had no idea you were coming. Sir Parmina said...
I know what Sir Parmina said, but I'm feeling better, and I decided to come in. Vaclav waited for me downstairs. No, don't bother to announce us. We'll just go on in.
One of Gary's people had stepped to the desk and had the receptionist's hand in a grip that, Rafe knew, could tighten in an instant to excruciating pain. He nodded at Rafe. The boardroom double doors were not locked during meetings. There had never been need. Now, two of Gary's people pulled them open and stepped inside, while Rafe pushed his father through. Vaclav walked beside him. Lou Parmina, at the head of the table, had been pointing at a display hovering over the group. Rafe tipped his head. One of the guards stepped that way. Lou had gone white, but he recovered quickly.
Sir Dunbarger, Garston, we didn't expect you today. What a pleasant surprise.
Rafe didn't look down at his father. He was watching Parmina's hands.
Is it? It wasn't a pleasant surprise when your goons abducted me and my family from our home, killed my son-in-law, and spent the next several 10 days torturing us.
My goons? Well, what do you mean? You're confused. You...
A stocky red-headed woman on the far side of the table stood up.
You said Garston had to go into hiding for fear of his life, Lou. You said you knew where, but couldn't tell us for security reasons.
Rafe's implant informed him that this was Madeline Pronst, Senior Vice President for Human Resources. Headhunter, hatchet woman, and yet not universally hated. Madeline, his father had said, was ruthless with the incompetent, as willing to chop off a VP or division head as a terrified new hire, but oddly compassionate with those who had real problems, and fair-minded with everyone.
Well, I thought that's what I was told.
Rafe could just about see the gears whirling in Parmina's head, trying to cover himself.
Interesting. The men who killed my grandson. My daughter was forced into induced labor while captive, and the men then murdered the infant in front of me and my wife. Told me with great pleasure that you had ordered it, and what you planned to do with the power you would gain as CEO of ISC.
Parmina pointed at Rafe.
He did it. He's been bad from the first. He's jealous of me. He wants the power for himself. He came back. He had you abducted. He had his hirelings tell me you were in hiding, told them he was acting on my behalf, and then he fooled you by pretending to rescue you.
It wasn't pretense. I would have been dead in a few hours if he hadn't come. And I think I know my son better than you do. A lot of things make more sense now, Lou.
Rafe watched Lou's hand slide under the table. That would be the panel for the emergency response, his father had told him.
It won't work. You have no communication with the outside world, Lou. No, not even your skull phone, as you've no doubt been noticing while you tried to buy time.
This is ridiculous!
That was Oster. Termanian and Wickens hadn't yet moved, though they were sweating more than the innocent would.
Lou is a respected member of this corporation. He has been handling things since you disappeared. You can't just walk in here and expect us to fall in line.
His hands, below table level, jerked up suddenly. Rafe felt a surge of glee, drawing and firing his pocket needler before Oster's weapon was clear of the table. Oster slumped forward, his face thudding onto the table's polished surface. Rafe had hardly taken his eyes off Parmina. He had felt Oster's move as much as seen it.
You disgusting little leech. Why didn't you die?
Rafe pretended to blow smoke off the end of his needler and slid it back into its holster.
Only the good die young. And you're older than I am, Lou. Feeling lucky today? By all means, go for that pocket blaster. It's a messy way to commit suicide, and it will make things hard for your family, if they care. I understand your daughter's not fond of you, so my sister says. But you might be able to set it off before one of us drilled you.
Rafe let his smile widen. The directors nearest Lou at that end of the table leaned away, ashen-faced. Lou spread his hands wide.
If I surrender...
Oh, I don't think you'll surrender. I think you'll do something stupid, and we'll have to kill you.
That's murder!
Is it?
Wasn't what you did to 17 skiers murder when you set off that avalanche to kill my sister and her boyfriend and it also took 15 others? Wasn't what you did to the passengers in that plane murder when you tampered with the instruments so the pilot flew into a hill and killed another of my sisters? I think it was.
You can't take the law into your own hands. It's illegal. It's...
Scared now, are you?
Rafe pulled out his needler again and pretended to polish it with his handkerchief, all without taking his eyes off Lou. Lou stood, awkwardly, trying to back away from the table.
You have to let me explain. You have to listen.
Rafe cocked his head. He could feel everyone's attention, including his father's. The rush of anticipation merged with the rush of pleasure from shooting Oster. He thumbed the selector on his needler.
No, I don't have to listen.
Murderer!
Not yet. I merely use more efficient knockout drugs than most. You, on the other hand...
Rafe thumbed the load selector again. Termanian threw himself back in his chair, hands over his face.
He made me do it! He said if I didn't...
Oh, be quiet.
Rafe nodded to the guard nearest Termanian.
Secure him, would you?
I think we might adjourn to the room next door while someone picks up the fallen.
Rafe waited until the near side of the table was clear before moving his father down the room toward that door. Their last firm suspect lingered, looking around uneasily.
I do know about you, but it's up to you whether you want to cooperate or cause trouble.
I should have said something. When Lou first came to me, I should have... But it seemed to make sense in a way. And he promised. Suddenly, all my pet birds died. And he said how easy it was for pet birds to catch something. And I knew what he meant.
Did you know his plans for me, Wickens? For my family?
No, I swear I didn't. I wouldn't have... Even scared, I'd have told someone. It was just like, vote like this, or let this project run, or terminate this one.
I see. You will forgive me if I must delve a little deeper than that. I had not suspected Lou myself, and it makes me suspicious of others.
I understand. And I'm sorry, I really am. I had no idea he was capable of anything like...
Torturing people and killing babies? Neither did I. But he did. And those who helped him in any way, knowing or unknowing, are going to be held accountable.
I will resign from the board at once.
Of course you will. But I commend you for saying so quickly. I'm afraid you'll have several unpleasant days, but I assure you they will not be as unpleasant as mine were. If you will go with these gentlemen...
His father nodded at the two of Gary's people who stood ready.
Yes. I'm sorry.
I'm sure you are. Rafe, let's go in.
The room looked more like a lounge, with couches and chairs arranged around the room, and a bar at the end. The faces turned toward his father were all, as far as Rafe could tell, full of honest concern and shock.
I want you all to know that I had begun an internal investigation into some irregularities about 2 years ago. At no point in that investigation did I suspect that Lou Parmina had anything to do with the irregularities. I had known Lou for years, as all of us have. He was my protege. I brought him into management myself when he was an eager young intern. When we were abducted, I could not believe at first what we were told, that he was behind it. However, I was wrong. He was acting against the intent of this board and against me. In the days since Rafe rescued us, he and I have been able to crack some of Parmina's files and see what he had in mind. This evidence, where it does not compromise our internal security, will be turned over to law enforcement. I wish to apologize to the board for having brought Lou into our confidence, for not having realized what he was. I hope you will agree that I have been sufficiently punished.
Of course, Garston. None of us spotted it. He must have had incredibly good luck, or an accomplice within the firm to keep it all so quiet.
He's very intelligent. My own guess is that his first goal was simply to rise in the company and end up as CEO. I'm not sure when his other goals became involved.
but it was not recent. I'm now convinced that he was behind the attempted abduction of Rafe and his sister Penelope, the incident in which Rafe killed the invaders and saved himself and his sister, and behind the advice to send Rafe away. He wanted to eliminate the competition, as he saw it.
So, I'm assuming Oster was one of his people. Termanian? Wiccans?
Yes. We have some of the other names, but not by any means all. However, more immediately, there's the matter of the running of the company. As you can see, I am physically impaired. Doctors are unsure if I will regain all function. I am also mentally impaired due to damage to my implant, which propagated into the brain. It does not affect my language functions, and I have passed a competency test. But I am not at full capacity. And in this crisis, ISC needs someone who is. They tell me that for full recovery, if it's possible, I must have my damaged implant removed, and I will be much more impaired then for some considerable time. No new implant can be installed until the brain damage has healed.
And we are all suspect. Perhaps not in your mind, Garston, but everyone on the board must be, at least for a while.
Yes. And that's why I want you to agree to my next request. I want you to approve Rafe as my successor, at least on a temporary basis.
Rafe? But he's not... He has no background.
Rafe's father raised his hand.
Hear me out. Rafe was brought up in the business. His university studies, to the point at which he left, covered business topics. And ISC was the model used in classes. I know, because I checked at the time. He has done work for us as an undercover agent from time to time, especially in the last 5 years, investigating situations important to ISC in a number of systems. This has required him to live under assumed names, some of which, fortunately, Lou Parmina did not know.
Was he on the payroll? I don't recall.
No. As some of you know, he received a remittance on condition of staying away from Nexus, except for brief visits, not more than once every year. In part, to protect his cover, I did not put him on the payroll. I found his data to be accurate, and there was no indication that he ever breached our confidence.
I see. Well,
Pronst gave Rafe a challenging look.
Do you think you're up to this, young man? You'll have your father's advice, but...
In many ways, I'm not up to it. As several of you pointed out, I haven't been working openly in the company, and I don't know all the right people and procedures. Any one of you, any division head for that matter, knows more about how things work here at headquarters than I do. In other ways, I agree with my father that I am the only person for the job right now. I know things about ISC and its employees, out in the systems where our income originates, that none of you can. I can untangle the mess Lou Parmina left faster than you can, because I have not only the background, but also off-world contacts you lack. ISC is in crisis not only because of Lou Parmina. You don't know this yet, but shipboard ansibles are now being used both by a hostile force intent on domination of systems and by the force that opposes it. I saw the ansibles myself. I know they work. I know that they're being manufactured somewhere off Nexus 2, though not yet where. Once technology like that gets loose, as I'm sure you appreciate, it can't be stuffed back in the closet. We are in a fair way to lose our monopoly, to be seen as an obsolete, inferior system of communication, useful only for those systems too poor to afford better.
The shock Rafe saw on their faces now was economic. All of them could see the implications of that.
We have ruled the universe within hundreds of light years by virtue of controlling communications. We wisely did not bother with planetary governments. We simply maintained open communications and insisted on our monopoly. It was a great idea, and it worked brilliantly until technology advanced, when every ship carries its own ansible.
But they don't link with ours.
They didn't link with ours. The ones we manufactured didn't, but there was no technical reason why they couldn't. It was ISC's decision to limit connectivity to maintain control of the technology. We've lost that. At present, I haven't personally seen a shipborne ansible with the capability to connect directly to our net. But if you believe it won't happen, you believe in fairy tales.
stunned silence. One of the men, Bennett Dargent, his implant informed him, raised his hand.
You talk about a hostile force. Do you know anything about that?
Quite a bit, but that's not the first order of business. The first order of business is whether or not you'll confirm me to my father's role. I certainly can't do what needs to be done without your support. And I believe I can if I have it.
You have mine, but you knew that.
And mine. I can see we've got a crisis. We need all of Garston's input we can get, and Rafe seems to have skills none of us have.
The rest fell in line with almost no more resistance. When they moved back into the main boardroom, all its messes cleared away, Rafe sat at the head of the table, with his father's float chair at his left hand, and called the meeting to order. The next morning, Rafe woke in his own room, on a bed that he had not realized his body remembered.
This won't do.
He wasn't that young boy. He had been moved to tears that they'd saved his room, kept it for him, but he was no longer the person for whom these mementos had meaning. He ignored the robe his mother had put out for him, obviously his father's, and padded down the hall to the bathroom. A quick shower and into the suit.
A suit? Feels more like a costume.
The car would be waiting. He glanced outside. It was. He tapped out the code Gary had given him, and the lights flared and died. So it was the right car. He was sure it would be. Gary had been paid his fee with a bonus, and Rafe was using Gary's people for the house security as well as his own.
You're not leaving already.
His sister's bruises had gone an even uglier yellow and green, with a few magenta marks where the injuries had been bone deep. In the hall light, she looked fragile and ill.
I have to. I have to be at the office on time. Can you believe it? Your bad boy brother getting all dressed up to go to the office on time?
Don't!
Penny put out her arms, and Rafe pulled her into a quick, fierce hug.
You're not bad. You were never bad. I shouldn't have cried that night.
It's not your fault. You were young. You were scared. I killed Aunt Pet.
But if I hadn't...
This would still have happened. It wasn't you. It was him.
That charming, intelligent, clever snake of a man. That monster, now locked in a cell deep within ISC headquarters. Rafe pushed her gently back.
I have to go. I have to take over. Father said so.
Will he ever be the same?
I don't know, but I know we'll do all we can for him.
In the car, in the darkness of an autumn morning, with cold rain drizzling down, Rafe turned on the light and looked at the data chips, glittering blue-violet, that his father had given him. Backups to the implant his father had had. Or if Lou Parmina had found them first, traps for anyone who used them. He needed the data. Lou would have known he'd need the data. Be careful, his father had said. He put the chips back in his inner pocket. ISC's headquarters building was lit top to bottom 2 hours before most employees were due at work. At the main entrance, Rafe's bodyguard, still one of Gary's people, stepped out first, looked around, and then opened his door.
You did remember the body armor, sir?
I never leave home without it. But I'm hoping that the snake had only one head.
At the door, the security guard recognized him and would have passed him through, but Rafe stopped him.
Son, I've had more faces than you have years. Don't you ever skimp on validating ID. Not with me, not with anyone. Now check my bioscans properly.
Yes, sir.
He chose the lift for ordinary employees, transferring at the 7th floor to the stairs. He needed the exercise, he told himself. Later, he would have to find some way to work exercise into his daily schedule. Not only the executive gym, but also someone to spar with. Someone to shoot against. His bodyguards, one a flight ahead and one a flight behind, would probably be ideal. At the 11th floor, the stairway door opened around the corner from the elevators. Rafe's forward guard stopped before turning and produced a small flat screen connected to a fiber-optic wand with a lens at the end. Rafe peered over his shoulder as he extended it around the corner. Someone was waiting, positioned to watch the elevator. Someone suited, but with an ominous bulge under his jacket. A receptionist, pale and immobile, sat perched on the edge of her chair to one side. The bodyguard glanced back at Rafe and cocked his head. Rafe shrugged and ran a finger along his own throat. The guard extended the wand again. The man was down, not yet dead, but clearly dying. The receptionist had both hands to her mouth and looked about to faint. The bodyguards both went ahead. No one else was in sight. No one popped out from behind one of the ornamental plants. Rafe followed, smiling at the receptionist.
Sarah Contado? Most upsetting for you. I'm so sorry. You'll want some time off to recover.
Please, I don't want to look.
Of course not. Come over here.
Rafe took hold of her chair and swung it around so she faced the striped curtains at the windows.
Was he here when you got here?
He must have been hiding around the corner. I was in early. I always come in early, and I knew... I thought you're new. I wanted to be here.
That was very thoughtful of you.
And I was sitting here sorting the calls that had come in, just as I always do... did for your father. I mean, I'm not his assistant or anything, but the calls do come to me first, and I do my best.
I'm sure you do. So you were sitting here sorting calls?
Yes. By urgency. You understand things you'd need to know about immediately, and then I just saw a sort of shadow, and he was beside me, and he had a weapon. He said he'd kill me if I moved, and I didn't move. I couldn't move. I was so scared.
Of course. And you're still frightened. Of course you are. I'm going to call down for some tea.
Don't leave me!
I'm not leaving.
There's hot beverage service here always. I could make...
Just tell me where it is. I can make tea.
Not you. You're the chairman.
Even chairman can boil water. Is it there? In that cabinet?
He had spotted the concealed doors. She nodded.
Then you sit right there. I'll just be a few meters away, and we'll start this day over with a nice cup of tea.
Into which, if he was lucky, he could pour the something stronger he expected would be in the same cabinet. He glanced at his bodyguards. One was still kneeling beside the corpse. The other was watching him. When he opened the doors, he saw immediately where the man had hidden. The cabinet was intended to house not only a hot drink service, but cleaning supplies for the reception area as well. The marks of a vacuum and bucket were clear on the floor, but that side was empty. The hot drink service was in working order, and in less than a minute, Rafe handed Sarah Contado a fat gray mug with the ISC logo in blue and gold. The intruder had emptied the bottle of brandy he'd hoped to use, but the sugar he'd poured into her tea should help.
We'll need to get this to forensics.
We should give law enforcement a chance. They're probably not all bent.
Whatever you say, sir.
One of you come with me. I want to get Sarah Contado out of here before you move anything.
His father's office looked the way Rafe had always imagined it, the way vid shows depicted the offices of senior executives in major corporations. The outer office, with two desks for the assistants and a small seating area for those waiting a meeting with the CEO. The inner office, a large carpeted space with a desk that seemed at first glance as big as some of the ship cabins Rafe had traveled in. The seating area, with its small couches arranged around a low table, the vase of fresh flowers there, the bookcases, the windows with their curtains. A door led into a small passage with a bathroom. A full bath, he noticed, on one side, and a compact kitchen on the other. Beyond was a meeting room, smaller than the boardroom, but still big enough for 10 people to sit around the oval table. And now... it was his space, his domain, the domain he had never wanted, or the domain he had not let himself want, knowing it was impossible. It felt too big and too limited at the same time. He handed Sarah Contado to one of the soft couches, putting her mug down on the table for her, and crossed to the desk. The top was bare, a smooth expanse of flame-grain wood with smoked glass inserts for the desk displays.
I'm going to call down to the infirmary. They can send up a nurse, and of course you'll take the day off.
Oh, but I can't. I can't afford...
Her cheeks turned red.
It won't count against you. Think of it as a reward for your bravery. You should be proud of yourself. You didn't scream. You didn't faint.
I didn't, did I? I thought I would. I thought, I can't stand this, and then... I'm still here.
I think you should at least rest in the infirmary for a while. We need to check the building and make sure you will be safe when you leave. Is that all right with you?
I'm feeling much better. I don't think I need to rest.
Just for a little while. You don't have to lie down if you don't want. Just give us a chance to check things out.
By the time the nurse arrived, Rafe was already engulfed in the day's crises. The police were on the way. Nothing should be moved. The building security staff, with rough guidance from Gary's people, were moving through every space they knew about, Rafe thought, with speed that he hoped wouldn't let them miss something important. No other intruders had been found yet. As her small fleet moved slowly to the outer reaches of Adelaide's system, Kai sent Ransom's rangers to scout out three different systems within a one-jump range. She didn't expect to find pirates in any of them. It was more of a test of the rangers' ability and willingness to do what they were told, and of the Ansible's performance across much greater distances. The ranger ships jumped out as soon as they had cleared the mass limit. Kai did not expect to hear from them for days. She had ordered all the larger ships to move slowly so that there would be ample time to receive reports before reaching the mapped jump point. 5 days later, Furious reported from its target system. The Ansible signal was as clear as if they were alongside. The report, as she'd expected, was of an empty system with a single relay Ansible, non-functional. Kai put a note in the navigation tables and told Furious to return to the group. Courageous reported in only 12 hours later with the same news, and Kai called them back as well. Glorious had gone the farthest. It was the direction Kai wanted to take the fleet, heading back toward the area where Vata had trade routes. In the navigation database, that system was also uninhabited, with a relay Ansible now off list. Because of the 6-day jump lag, a report from the system would be at least 12 days out of date before they could arrive. But Captain Ransom still needed the practice in using the shipboard Ansible. His report was the same as the others, empty system as expected. Furious reappeared in Adelaide's system. Kai watched the scan as Captain St. Cyrian dumped excess velocity, micro-jumped to realign his vector, and reappeared precisely where she had asked him to go.
Very neat handling.
Thank you, ma'am. Have you heard from Teddy?
What we expected. He should be back here within the next 12 hours.
Courageous also reappeared on schedule and came into position neatly on their other side. Finally, only 2 hours from their planned jump into FTL, Glorious reappeared. Ransom looked indecently boyish as he threw her an elaborate salute.
Great news, Captain Vata. There's no problem at all. In fact, you have friends there.
Friends?
Yes. Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation just arrived as I was getting ready to jump out. I have their transition profile if you'd like to see it. We also picked up a bit of chatter. They're going to be training there. Brilliant of you to anticipate where they'd be.
Kai blinked. She'd had no idea Mackenzie would be training in that system.
Did you contact them?
Oh, no. You said we should act as scouts, and scouts should not announce themselves. Or should we have?
No, you did quite right. Though you could have contacted me by Ansible with that update.
Kai noticed that Ransom's crew had moved Glorious quickly into position with deft micro-jumps. These little ships might prove useful after all.
Their scans probably picked you up, but if you were on the way out, they might have ignored it.
I should have thought of that. They wouldn't have known if I'd used the Ansible. I was thinking they might intercept and we were being scouts, so I shouldn't risk being overheard.
That's all right. It's a new technology to you. You'll think of it next time. We're about to jump out, then, if you're ready.
Quite ready, I assure you. Mapped point to mapped point. It's exactly 6.3 days of FTL transit.
Switch to Channel F, then.
Kai gave the order to the other ships.
We want to exit with low relative velocity. Captain Ransom reports that Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation is training in that system. They will have their own scouts out, and we don't want to be attacked as pirates before we have a chance to explain. I'm going to assume that, despite Captain Ransom's care, they might have spotted his outbound jump and might have planted mines at the jump point. Synchronize navigation computers.
She hoped this would work with ships of such disparate mass. No reason why it shouldn't. They reached transition simultaneously, and during the next 6 days of FTL isolation, Kai kept her crew busy. If they were to meet McKenzie in that system, if the M-MAC ships were still out there, she wanted to present a military appearance without, however, getting killed out of hand. They all emerged from the jump point within seconds of one another, still in formation. Kai heaved a sigh of relief as the last ship reported in, even before scan cleared.
Captain Ransom, detail one of your ships to stay with our transport. Everyone else, formation Zeta, blue, but slowly. When your scan clears, watch for mines.
The mines showed up when scan cleared. 5 clusters, spaced to allow lanes between them for those who either knew the locations or were slow enough, with good enough scan, to avoid them.
Is that McKenzie's standard toss-out?
I don't know, but it's not like what I saw at Sabine. Of course, I didn't have the scan capability then that we have here. It's an effective distribution, though.
Other scan data came in. At first glance, the system was full of ships of all sizes and types.
McKenzie?
Hugh pointed.
No, the McKenzie ships are there. They've got clear beacons. They're not hiding who they are. These are something else. That new software you loaded thinks most are bogies, drones, signal emitters. Stuff tossed out to be confusing. There's at least 4 actual ships, but with fogged beacons, which doesn't look good. And micro-jumping here, here, and there. Looks like an attack pattern to me. They've pincered the McKenzie ships.
Pirates, then, attacking McKenzie. They'll get a surprise.
Maybe not. Look at the numbers.
Whatever they were, they outnumbered the McKenzie ships at least 2-1. And when the weapons analysis came up, they outgunned them as well.
Whatever it is, it's trouble.
Kai hit the alarm. Lights flashed for alert status. She saw the board's light with acknowledgments from weapons. Number 1 battery was first, as usual.
We jump out?
Not yet. I want to know what's going on.
There's more of them than us.
Kai was not going to repeat the mistake she'd made with Osman. Ship ID beacons began to register.
I know. McKenzie. The 2 together there. I know that beacon logo.
Right. I recognize it too. Who are the others?
Kai's stomach tightened into the familiar knot.
They have shipboard ansibles. They've got to be the enemy. And they weren't expecting us.
Clearing scan showed that 4 of the enemy were in the same attack formation they'd used before, their ships converging from either side, both pairs in echelon, with the McKenzie ships at the crossing of the X.
Tactical conservatives.
And we're in position to hit them on the flank.
If she wasn't being rash again, if she wasn't missing something deadly, this time she had to get it right.
Except for those.
She indicated the other icons, still marked unknown type, unknown origin.
Those may not be ships. Like I said, we used to get scan data like that from drones or from hollows. They don't carry ID beacons, drones. They're just there to be scary.
Kai eyed them suspiciously.
I'd hate to discount them and then find that they're firing up my tail.
True, and there are such things as towed arrays or armed drones. But considering the way they're arranged, I think they're fakes. What's our mass detector say?
We're too far out still.
Kai chewed her lip. 4 pirates against 2 McKenzie ships. The Max might fight free. They were certainly capable, as she knew. And she had no duty to them. On the other hand, she did have a duty to destroy the enemy, as long as it didn't mean losing her own ships. And she had wanted them as allies.
If those other icons are harmless drones or fakes of some kind, we'd make it 5-4, not even counting the little ships. And I know the McKenzies aren't going to sit there doing nothing.
Battle stations?
Yellow only. We have hours to go before we're in range, and I don't want to jump until we're well clear of the mines and sure we aren't jumping into worse. I hope McKenzie can hold out that long. Signal the others with the new code.
That now seemed a brilliant idea. Her spirits lifted. They had tactical surprise, secure communications, and a superior position.
We can take them, and if we get McKenzie on our side...
Crossing fire.
We're far enough out to track it and avoid it. We can define their plane.
The X-attack made things simpler for the attackers, who knew exactly where their own fire would go. But a third party could attack from off-plane, avoiding the original shots and also the intended victim. She explained her plan to the other captains, who agreed with her analysis.
3-4 is not bad odds.
It's 5-4 in our favor, really. Not even counting our scouts. The Mackenzie ships will fight, and fight well. We do have to let them know we're on their side, though, and we can't really communicate with them until we're close enough for light speed to make sense. In the meantime, they have no reason to believe our beacons are honest, even if they notice us in the confusion.
When do you think the pirates will notice us?
Depends. This isn't a heavily used transfer jump point, so they may be concentrating on the Mackenzie ships. And if they're monitoring their drones or hollows or whatever those other signals are, their scan tech may be too busy to notice new signals in the system. I wonder why the Mac ships aren't moving faster.
Already disabled?
Or they had personnel on EVA. If they were on a training mission, practicing EVA, they'd want to recover their personnel before they moved.
That just makes targets out of them. They can get roasted by passing fire.
Vanguard and Bassoon had military-grade microjump capability, but Shara's gift did not. Argelos could jump his ship only in longer hops, with less precision. Kai made a mental note to find out what it would take to bring his ship up to military specs. Later, maybe much later. Now, she considered the relative advantages to keeping her little group together and decided it was worth the risk to disperse them.
We can talk in real time all the way across the system. There's no reason for us to stick close. If we can position Shara's gift on the exit side of their attack to take them in the opposite flank...
Crossing fire.
Different plane. If we're above their plane, our fire will cross, but not on one another, nor theirs on ours.
Right. I can make that in one hop, pretty close, I think, anyway.
Kai hoped he was right. Kylara turned to Pettigrew and pointed to the display.
And we can come in with short hops. Here's where we want to end up. With any luck, they'll be too busy monitoring their own decoys or drones, and we'll be able to blindside them.
What about us? Where do you want us?
Where he and the others wouldn't interfere, but she couldn't say that.
We need someone to watch our backs. Furious has to concentrate on the transport. We need someone watching our backs and also helping to trace weapons tracks. But you're so maneuverable, I want you to get close enough to get off some shots if needed. I'd like Courageous here and Glorious there.
Do we announce ourselves or just hope that the Mackenzie ships assume we're friendly?
When we blow their attackers, I think they'll get the picture. But I'm planning to tell them as soon as we're close in, to less than one light minute range. Oh, and have your communications personnel check the channel we know the pirates use at least twice a minute. If you pick up anything interesting, record it and pass it on later.